Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we're recapping the Zozo Championship at Sherwood in California and some other golf headlines, and the hoodie debate rolls on thanks to Rory. Tiger is in action. We had a sneak attack win out there. We get into that. Plus what we're tuned into, pop politics recapping the second and final debate. We got our buddy Anthony on to tell you about the states you need to care about on election night as well too. And this week's guest is a great artist named Jermaine. He's got a following on Instagram and just put out a new music video with past guest Mae Brennan as well. We get into that, play his music. Last but not least, we're talking college hoops, bubbles, and Halloween plans when we hashtag always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Active Body. Mike, I talk about it all the time, and I'm doing this workout 5 days a week because it's super easy to do. It's only a 5-minute commitment for lots of the workouts that the Active 5 device can do for you. You hold it in the palms, in the face of your hands. You put it on various parts of your body, and bing, bang, boom, it's a great way to quickly stretch, get that workout in. Feel like you got a little bit of extra exercise in your day as well. You can do it in addition to going to the gym, or just do it by yourself a minimum 5 minutes a day. Active Body is the product, and COL is our promo code to get 20% off the Active 5. Again, activebody.com, promo code COL.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Groove It Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, we are just 3 weeks away from the Masters, and we had a loaded tournament at the Zozo Championship at Sherwood, not to be confused to its former home across the Pacific. And this was quite a weekend. This had just everything going on. Winning score at 23 under.
Yeah, just yikes.
Lots of 65s all over the place.
That's right. Yeah, 23 under, you said, from the eventual champion, and birdies everywhere. This is a course and venue. Some people may remember it hadn't been around on tour for 7 years, but you remember back in the day, that last final hit and giggle silly season event in December that was hosted by Tiger Woods used to be at Sherwood before they moved it out to where it is at the Bahamas right now, the Hero World Challenge, which we're not going to see this year. So that used to be this iteration of that where they played at Sherwood. They moved the Zozo there because of everything going on overseas in Asia to avoid having the tournament there, and it created some fireworks, a great field, like you said, positioned very well a couple weeks before the Masters, and a lot of the world's best were towards the top of the leaderboard on Sunday.
Yeah, it ended up being Patrick Cantlay pulling it out with, like we said, 65 all over the place. He shot one of his two 65s in round four to pull out the win over Justin Thomas. John Rahm also was in the hunt for most of the tournament. I mean, other names on here, name I haven't seen toward the top of the leaderboard in a while. Bubba Watson was up there.
Yeah.
I mean, what do we think about performances right now? What do we think this means for the Masters coming up in 3 weeks?
I mean, everyone on Twitter, if you were on Sunday night, they have added Patrick Cantlay to their Masters card after that performance. It's a guy that's kind of a very poised player, always putting himself in position. Probably should have won by more than three times now at this point in his career on tour, but he's consistent. He's very sneaky. I believe top 15 or 20 in the world in terms of his ranking. You know, he just kind of creeps up and has a lot of solid finishes at some of the biggest stages. So it just shows you how deep the top of the world is in terms of the best golfers out right now, that beyond, you know, the JT, John Rahm, Rory, Pack, there are just several other guys that are chomping at the bit, and Cantlay is another one of them. This is an impressive W.
Let's talk about Rory real quick too, and his hoodie. What did you think of the hoodie look that he was sporting?
I love Rory because, you know, we had the attire debate. We've had it for the last couple of weeks now on the podcast. It had risen to be officially a pop culture issue that was talked about on social media. And Rory just being kind of like the front runner of everything on the PGA Tour.
Kind of the tour's unofficial leader, really.
Yeah, and spokesman. Yes. And like basically he just kind of put his stance on the whole thing. rocking the hoodie over the weekend. And it was cold, those California mornings, Mike. It's down in the 40s and 50s when they are teeing off. So perfect weather for it. And that's a sleek hoodie right there. I mean, that is no child's play hoodie like the one I'm wearing right now as I record with you. That's the real deal.
Here's what I have to say about the hoodie. I don't have a problem with the hoodie on the course. I did not like the hoodie up. That's where, to me, it just started to look a little weird. It's like, I'm all for the hoodie as like a fashion statement, but once that hood comes up over your head, and he was wearing it over his head for a couple swings too, wasn't he? It was just weird.
That was strange for swings. I wouldn't feel comfortable wearing it for swings. The funny image would be of him like walking down the fairway with the hood up and like his hand in his pocket. He looks like he's a member of the grounds crew.
Yeah.
He starts rocking that.
I mean, it's one thing to have on a skull cap or something and to be wearing that while you're out playing, but to have the hood like be moving around on you, that's where, to me, it's like, I guess these guys are the best in the world, so they can do whatever they want. But
yeah, these are probably things only you and I think about because we have 15 swing thoughts and these guys have one or two.
That's true. So. Speaking of swing thoughts and just what we thought of this final pairing on Sunday, well, not a final pairing, but a Sunday final pairing, Phil and Tiger were together on Sunday. They both kind of sucked it up, but they played together.
They did. It was an interesting pairing. And shout out to Adam Long, the third member of that group, who was tweeting out some funny stuff about being involved in that pairing and how he knew that Tiger and Phil would be very intimidated to play with him on Sunday, which makes a lot of sense as well. Tiger and Phil didn't exactly have the most fantastic weeks. Good to see them play together, though. I think it's happened something like 40-something times now in tournament play. But nonetheless, this seemed like it might have been the final tune-up, but we're still waiting on what Phil and Tiger do here in the next couple weeks. It's an awkward schedule, Mike, with this November Masters, which is 3 weeks out. Typically, Phil and Tiger like to play 2 weeks out, you know, take the week off before. Phil has played sometimes the week before, but this Houston Open on the schedule has kind of thrown a cramp in everyone's pre-Masters plans.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with it. I mean, Phil used to every once in a while play the tournament before the Masters. Every once in a while,
he would. The week before, it changed venues a few times. But you're right, and there had been, I think, one or two scenarios where he would win the week before and then won the green jacket afterwards. That's why he kept doing it.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what it's like. But I mean, how confident are you that they're even going to contend to the Masters after this weekend? I mean, they both did not play well. Phil seems to only play well in the Champions Tour anymore. And Tiger only plays well when it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. It's just like it's hard to believe that they're going to put themselves into contention. But I will say, if there's any major where you don't have to have a ton of form, you just have to love the venue, it's the Masters. We've seen the Bernhard Langer and the Fred Couples stories, and the guys who just have an affinity and play well for a course, no matter how they're feeling or playing or look in terms of their shape of game. So I teased in our promo for this episode that it's Phil and Tiger season. I'm saying that because you know, this build up to Augusta, we always bring those two names up. But yeah, I wonder how much luster there is in terms of actually putting them on your card and thinking they'll have a chance at Augusta in a couple weeks.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye and see what happens. The other thing we're keeping an eye on is, of course, what's going to be happening over the next 2 weeks in terms of fans, because they are coming back.
Fans back in golf.
Yeah, yes. They're already back in the NFL. They're back in college football. They're back in Major League Baseball in the World Series. And they're finally going to be coming back to golf. Late to the party here, even though golf was one of the first sports back on the pitch. What do you think of this? We talked about it last week.
I respect them taking their time and leaning into this. And I think this is a good time of the year to test the water with it. Yeah, this is kind of a slower season right now. These are not as high profile tournaments as there are maybe, you know, in Florida or the West Coast coming around to the winter and the spring months. They're going to test the waters with the Bermuda Championship this week. That is, you know, a very remote location in and of itself. There's just not a lot of people on Bermuda that attend that tournament in the first place. Mm-hmm. They're going to keep it very limited to people that are on the island. I think they're looking at somewhere around 1,500 to 2,000 people on the grounds, which, if you understand the metrics of a golf course, it's extremely spread out, and that crowd can absolutely be handled. They're looking at 2K for the Houston Open in a couple weeks right now. Phil has come out and said that he's not sure if he is quite ready to play at the Houston Open, especially if they're going to keep their fan policy, and he might go play the senior event in Phoenix the week before Augusta. So lots of guys are approaching this a different way, but I respect the time of year they're trying this. And again, we're just kind of dipping our toe in the water and seeing how it goes before we make the wrap around to some real big tournaments.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm just confused with Phil not wanting fans. It's, I don't know. Maybe he's just trying to find an excuse to go win again on the senior tour. So,
and he just gobbles up those W's out there. So it's like, oh, well, I guess if I have to go back and beat up on the old guys again, I will.
Oh, well. Let's talk about the Bermuda Championship and all the fans there and who you think in this field. It's not a very big purse. It's only a $4 million purse. Just for reference, small. Patrick Cantlay just took home $1.4 million.
Yes.
So
himself. Yeah.
So what do you think of who's going to contend here?
Another a bit of an afterthought tournament if you're on the PGA Tour schedule and you watch golf, but I'll still be tuning in for the Tropical Vibes. I said that for the Corrales in Punta Cana a few weeks ago. This is going to be a very similar feel. You get a lot of holes and views of the water and just fantastic ocean scenery. We got a cold front coming in here to Texas. Temperatures are getting a little colder around the country, maybe not in your parts, but it's a good time to tune in for some tropical golf. Will Zalatoris, again, is the leading favorite to win the tournament, which tells you how crappy this field is. He's a Korn Ferry Tour member that doesn't even have PGA Tour membership. But I'm going with a guy who I've mentioned a month or two ago, and you remember this name because I made you repeat it. He's a teenager that's already won twice on the European Tour, Rasmus Højgaard, 19 years old. Oh, he's won twice. And he's going off at 35-1 odds. I don't know if this is his very first PGA Tour event officially, but it's got to be one of his first. So I like him to make a big splash in his debut on this limited field.
We'll see what happens. I mean, in terms of names on this field, just looking at some of them, I mean, Harold Varner III is there, Charlie Hoffman, Stuart Sink, they're Brendan Todd. There's some names on this card going out, but you know, it's no one really cares this weekend.
Brendan Todd, defending champion. You just reminded me about that. When he rattled off those two wins back-to-back very quietly, this was one of those weeks. So we'll look out for him to be a contender, and he'll probably be on my card as well at Course of Life 1 for the full card of my picks this week.
Let's turn over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. So I've been, as we've talked about before on this podcast, been watching a lot of bad movies. Been watching a lot of bad Halloween movies recently, and I watched Pride and Prejudice and Zombies a couple weeks ago.
Oh my goodness!
It was atrocious.
What a title!
Very bad. It was literally Pride and Prejudice with zombies in it. Literally,
I mean, well, it does live up to the title. That's for sure.
It does, and it's actually made me want to watch a lot of just Pride and Prejudice. So I'm now watching the BBC miniseries Pride and Prejudice, the one with Colin Firth.
So it ended up being a positive gateway in the end.
Yeah, my wife is very surprised that I want to watch a good Pride and Prejudice. She doesn't understand why I want to watch Pride and Prejudice. She doesn't think I should like a love story like that. And I'm emotional. I can be very emotional. I can enjoy a good love story.
Men, but we have our sensitivities. Yeah, it's okay.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Shout out to Pride, Prejudice, and Zombie on the crappy Halloween movie list. I love that.
Yeah. And I know you're also exploring maybe not the manly side, but at least not the stereotypical manly side in what you're watching.
Oh, yeah. I watch all the trash reality TV, in case you can't tell by now. We've been doing this pod for about 2 years. And I'm always fitting in the unbelievably horrible television shows that I'm consuming week in and week out. And I'm locked in. This one, though, I'm really getting entertained because we're seeing some actual talent. And that's on Dancing with the Stars, a show I've never really committed to. They've done 20-something seasons of it, Mike. I've always kind of tuned in here and there for maybe a finale or so. Mm-hmm. But I've actually been watching this full episode, Mike. Let me run through the cast for you real quick.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, first eliminated, you know him from our 90s basketball viewing days and The Last Dance, Charles Oakley, the former Nick.
Really?
He was the first eliminated. Yeah, tough go for him. Carol Baskin quickly followed afterwards. She was just an absolute mess, but on there for the fan favorite and the viewership. That was an interesting moment.
I completely forgot LaCarol Baskin was on it.
Yeah, that was only 4 weeks ago. She got eliminated. Time really flies in a pandemic, doesn't it?
It does, actually, yeah.
Unfortunately, Vernon Davis, the former NFL tight end, was just eliminated this past week. There's about 8 or 9 people left. I'm rooting for, shout out to Holy Moly, the host reporter, Jeannie Mai. She's dancing very well on there. So shout out to our Holy Moly fans and past guests we've had on the podcast. We're watching her. I'm watching AJ McLean from the Backstreet Boys and... Mike, you know my love for hip hop. Nelly is still alive.
Oh, goodness.
He still has a chance. Yes, that's right.
You know, I would expect, I've said this before, I used to watch this back in the day, and then I stopped because I just was over it. But anyone who was in a pop group or is a musician, because of what they need to do in their music videos and on stage, they're going to be good dancers. They're going to do well.
AJ McLean from the Backstreet Boys is great because he's been doing those choreographic dances for 3 decades now. So he's all over it, and he's definitely given himself a chance to win. And also, shout out to Neve from the MTV show Catfish. He's got a big dancing background because he's been just downright phenomenal. So I'm tuned in to Dancing with the Stars this season.
The other thing we were tuned in this past week was in pop politics, and that was the second and final presidential debate. And
thank
Alex,
God.
It was so boring. It was so civil and... somewhat adultish and comparatively, but after 40 minutes, I was like, I'm bored, and I turned it off.
Yeah. In typical American style, we get the like complete fireworks shit show debate, and then we cry for like more decency and a muting of the mics and more order, and then we get it all, and we're like, oh God, this is so boring.
It doesn't help that I already voted, and I knew who I was going to vote for months and years. And I knew who I was going to vote for years. So.
I think you're in the same position as a lot of people, no matter what side they're. I just, who's still undecided? Like, no matter what side you're on, how can you be undecided at this point?
Just, I don't know.
But yeah, it was the second and final debate. Right now, my scoreboard, I'm always talking in terms of a football spread. As you know, everything has a spread in life to me. I've got Trump at about a 6 or 7 point underdog right now. I think he's about a touchdown underdog in this race, which means that it still can be done. You know how the spread works in football.
Here's the thing.
Joe Biden is checking his watch right now, quite literally and figuratively, for this thing to be over.
Here's the thing. And that is that we all thought 4 years ago that Hillary was a shoo-in.
And I gave her about a touchdown favorite at this exact same moment four years ago.
So I don't know, man. I don't know.
Stay tuned. What we're going to do right now is we're going to pop in and we're going to have my buddy on, Anthony, because we love him. He's basically our John King to CNN. He's our maps guy. He follows the states. So here's a quick conversation I had with him where we break down the most important states that you need to tune into this election night. You know, there's 50 states, but like a lot of them are already decided. Here's what you really need to tune into next Tuesday night.
It really comes down to just a few states, which is, you know, it's kind of weird how that works out, but, you know, there's implications when it comes to, you know, the overall national vote, and obviously how big of a, you know, gap there is there. But in reality, when it comes to electing the president, it really just comes down to a few states.
Yeah, there's points given away to each state. It's the race to 270. And a lot of these states are kind of just really severely leaning to the left or right. And I would say probably 40 are pretty decided, or at least 30 something in that range. So we get to kind of the nucleus of when people are watching Tuesday night, what do they actually have to pay attention to? And we always have to start this conversation with the lovely state of Florida. I visit there often. It feels like a different country at times visiting it in 2020, with the way their policies are currently as to everything going on in the world. There's the hanging Chad. There's a lot of history with the state of Florida. Like, what do you actually anticipate happening in Florida, and which way is it leaning right now as we head to election week?
Yeah, I'm not going to preface anything here with any bias. I really, you know, I already voted. You know, I obviously respect everyone's decision on everything. But I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't think Florida matters. I think Florida probably matters towards, you know, I think Trump needs Florida. I'd be surprised, actually, even though the polls are leaning Biden, I'd be surprised if he didn't win Florida, to be honest. I would actually be surprised if he didn't win Florida. Mm. But it's like 1 or 2 percentage points. I mean, it's within the margin of error. So it's going to come down to turnout and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know if I have a prediction. I guess my prediction would be, I guess, Trump, just based off of, you know, the recent past. But I'll make it clear that it's just, I don't think Florida's the state. Like, we've had a lot of elections where Florida's been the state where it's made a huge impact on the election. And I just don't know if that's this year is really like, that's the state we need to be like fully focused on.
There's a lot of people that are just calling for it to be like a different map altogether from what we know in terms of Democrat versus Republican strongholds. And you're right, there is a history there with whoever wins Florida tends to win the presidential election. It goes back several presidents. So we'll see if Trump does pull that state off. It could be make his path a little bit more feasible on his end. Just to throw out a couple other states that people need to pay attention to. We're going to be getting results from all over the country throughout election night. But what are some other states that people actually really need to zero in on that have a reasonable effect on the outcome of the election?
So in 2016, what got Trump to win the total number of electoral votes to make him president was really the Rust Belt. So you're looking at Minnesota, Wisconsin, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Those are really, if you're really focused on watching this on Tuesday, those are states that you're going to be focused on, because if those states flip, and they may not all flip, but if they flip, you know, that's going to make it very tough for Donald Trump to win. To re-win the presidency, even if he wins something like Florida and Ohio, just because those states carry so many electoral votes. And if Biden carries those, he probably will be president. That being said, the polls are leaning Biden. They were leaning Hillary Clinton in 2016. Yeah. But they were also leaning Hillary at a lower amount. Now, polls are polls, right? They're not perfect. There's a margin of error. And so we don't know for sure, but those are the states, you know, you really want to look at on election day. I know that Minnesota's central time, I believe. So that might be a little bit back, but Ohio is East Coast time. And so you'll get a couple of those rust belts. Those are good states to look into. My big sleeper is going to be North Carolina. I think.
Oh, okay. North Carolina. Okay. Well, why should I be paying more attention to North Carolina?
Here's why I think North Carolina is huge. I think that if North Carolina moves to to the Democratic side this year, I think that signifies that the rest of those rust belts that are so important, like Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Wisconsin, those states are going to lean blue as well.
So a little domino effect to the left, maybe, with North Carolina's result.
Right. And I do believe North Carolina counts their votes as they come in for early voting. So
yes,
you're going to get results from North Carolina, you know. I don't know how fast you'll get them, but you'll get results fast. I don't know if we're going to get a decision fast, but you're going to get a good idea where this election is overall if North Carolina is tight or leans blue. If it's red, that's great news for Donald Trump, because it means he has a fighting chance in those Rust Belt states, and you know, and the country's mood is still where it was in 2016.
Okay, North Carolina, like that one. And then shout out to the Big Ten states that you just named a little earlier as well, too, in the Rust Belt. And no wonder Trump was on the phone with Commissioner Kevin Warren dying to get Big Ten football playing just in time for the election. There was some politics behind that, I guess, too. You just rattle off all the Big Ten states accidentally there in the Midwest.
Yeah, I mean, that's how politics work. I mean, that's kind of, you know, at the end of the day, you're just trying to make people happy. I mean, I'm not saying I support it or I don't support it, but at the end of the day, that's how politics work. You know, you try to sway people through action. And I think that at the end of the day, those are the states. And then let's just say, you know, a sixth state, you know, that might be, you know, the real deciding factor is Arizona. Because the polls are tight there, and let's say Biden wins Minnesota, Wisconsin, but doesn't win Ohio, doesn't win Pennsylvania, but then wins North Carolina, loses Florida. Well, what puts him over the top is Arizona. So there's a lot of pathways for Biden. The problem that you know either candidate has is indications from those earlier states like North Carolina are really going to prove it, they're gonna go into the other states. So you're gonna get a good idea where this country is with some of the earlier states. And I think that's the thing is like, I don't, you know, well, we can talk about November 3rd, but I don't think we're going to be seeing like a multiple day situation that everyone's fearing.
All right. So that's the final question I want to get to. It's on everyone's mind. It's, you know, we've invested a lot of time into this campaign and voting. It's been the biggest task in the world for everyone. It has been put a microscope on our entire democracy right now. Are we going to get an election result by the time we go to sleep at a reasonable hour on Tuesday night, November 3rd? Or are we going to prolong this for days and weeks like we're all fearing?
I think it depends on when you go to bed, but I think that I think by 1 a.m. East Coast
1 a.m., okay. Fair enough. I'll take it. 1
a.m. East Coast time, you're going to have a pretty solid idea. And remember, this happened on election night 2 years ago, or four years ago. This we knew on election night. Like, this isn't like a crazy idea. Everyone wants to go back to 2000 and relive that whole thing, but it's been 20 years since something like that's happened, and that was a very unprecedented event in our country. I think by 1 a.m. East Coast time, that's 12 Central, I think you're going to be able to find out the results. I really do, because I think it's just going to come down to a few states, and maybe they don't call it. You know, they may not call it on CNN or Fox News or whatever you watch, NBC, CBS, ABC, but at the end of the day, you're going to have a pretty good idea. If you listen to this podcast, you're going to have a pretty good idea of where this election's going, you know, just by the states we mentioned.
Exciting stuff. Abrutrus14 on Twitter and Instagram. Anthony, thanks for hopping on and happy election season.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Anthony, for that insight. North Carolina, I've heard it kicked around. I'm just Georgia, man. My state right now, Georgia, is a huge toss-up, I feel like.
Everyone's excited for their own state. Here I am down in Texas being like, I don't know, Texas could be close. It really could. You know, everyone's got the hype train going right now. You got to watch North Carolina. I like that very concise wrap of just the basic states you need to really follow, because there's, you know, every election, it's a handful of states that decide this whole thing. So you got to lock in on those for sure.
It really is. Also, side note, I'm listening to a lot of podcasts right now about the Electoral College. So now's the time to kind of brush up on your history of that. It's really, really quite interesting.
270, that's the number,
really,
right?
Something like that. Whatever it is.
270, yeah, that's the number.
Let's get into this week's guest. Week, we're going into the musical talent world once again. We're getting another artist out of here. We've had Kelly James and Sam Harrop on in the past. This week, we have another great artist and composer named Jermaine. He's based out of Utah, and he had another past guest in one of his new music videos that just came out.
That's right, he did. Yeah, Mae Brennan as well, who we had Holy Moly fame as well, too. Had that amazing hole in one on the show there, and she was featured in the video. We get into everything Jermaine's doing and did with that video, some awesome visuals, his music career, and a whole lot more.
But first, as always, we want to let you know this conversation is brought to you by Groovit Golf, makers of the sold-out Groovit Brush. It's coming back real soon. You have insight, Alex. You know when it's coming back. And we're talking, what, weeks right now?
We're targeting the holiday season. Yeah. We can get the Groovit Brush out in time for the holiday season. So stay tuned with us on that.
It's going to have some tweaks to it to make it even better. It's already much better than your average brush because it has a built-in pump that sprays water or cleaning solution right under your club face, allowing for quick and efficient scrubbing on the course. It's got detachable magnets so it can pop off your bag very easily. Plus, the brush comes with a 3-year bristle guarantee. If you can wear out the brush head cleaning clubs in 3 years, send it back and Groovit will get you a free replacement. Now, that is reliability. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control the clean grooves will give you using your existing golf clubs with the Groovit. You get the spin trajectory and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to grooveitbrush.com, get on the mailing list. So as soon as it's back in stock, which will be soon, you'll be able to get that brush. It's a great stocking stuffer. We have a lot of great stocking stuffer ideas for you, and this is definitely one of them. So again, that's grooveitbrush.com.
Next up on the tee from Salt Lake City, Utah, we have an artist and composer that's new single and video Still Ain't Got You is out now, and it features another past guest of the podcast as well, which we'll get into. We have Jermaine joining us on the Course of Life. Jermaine, how you doing today?
Good. How you doing, Alex?
Absolutely. I'm doing great. Thanks for being on. I want to get to that word that I mentioned at the top, composer, because lots of people are in music, you know, whether they're hip hop or R&B or whatever genre they are, they call themselves an artist, a rapper, a lyricist. Well, what makes you a composer instead of the typical terms we hear with today's artists?
I like going by composer because I like bringing other producers, beat makers, other artists together, and that's kind of what a composer does. Is able to, I mean, if you've seen like a band, there's people that compose music, literally have the saxophone, the people that do the wood instruments, they have the trumpets, that, you know, and they compose, they put it together. So that's kind of what I do. It's kind of like a writer. So I would say it's a synonym to a writer or a rapper or singer, you know, so.
I like that. I appreciate that because a lot of people hear something on the radio and they just know the artist, but they don't know the pen behind it, the beat behind it, and the team that goes into making that. I appreciate that.
Exactly. Yeah, of course.
Tell me a little bit about your first exposure to music as a kid. What do you remember first listening to when you were younger?
I would say, I grew up around R&B, hip hop, jazz music. Personally, I loved listening to Snoop Dogg. It's weird. I mean, I'm considered kind of West Coast because I'm in Utah, Salt Lake City. But
yeah.
So I was heavily influenced by Snoop Dogg rap wise as a younger kid. I love like his cadence, his flow. Not knowing really much what he was talking about at the time, but I love the cadence. I love the flow. I was introduced to R&B. By my father as well. I listened to a lot of Jill Scott, Donnell Jones. Those are the more soulful R&B artists. And my grandmother's actually, she's a major, her major is music. And she got me into music. I played the alto saxophone for about 5 years. So I've always been in tune with music.
Okay, I love that. I'm getting the composer title, definitely, because there's a lot of different influences there. You know, we're similar generations, and I remember hearing Snoop Dogg's voice on like the next episode, Still Dre,
exactly,
like these classic moments in hip hop. And then you mentioning Jill Scott in the same sentence is really cool. So I'm seeing the variety in your taste for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's just how I grew up. So
love that. So tell me about the music you're making right now. It sounds like on the surface it's a blend of hip hop and R&B, but what else is going into that and kind of what are your inspirations for making music now these days?
Right now, my inspiration I get from now is I going in high school and I started actually listening to music and listening to what people say and not just the production and things like that. I started listening to more lyrics as I started listening to a lot of more of like Drake, Kendrick Lamar, Jermaine Cole, Wale, you know, those are artists that actually inspired me. Big Sean, Frank Ocean, you know, these are artists that inspired me, not through just the production, but cadence, flow, and actually the things that we're talking about, wordplay, you know, these are artists that inspired me. So I always loved that, and I never got into making my own music until about like I would say like 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago.
Okay.
I started really writing and doing my own music. And like I said before, I'm a big fan of hip hop and R&B. Those are like my soul music things that I listen to and that I am inspired by. But I don't limit myself. I love listening to all sorts of different music, especially now. House music, even there's like some like rock, like, you know, rock music, you know. I've been to a punk concert in San Bernardino, California, and it was just a whole different vibe. But, you know, I find inspiration in a lot of things I try to.
What bands were there at the punk concert? I'm curious, because that's the kind of music my wife loves.
Okay, I don't know. It was literally, my buddy is from, he's from Fontana, which is in IE, and we went to just a local show. It was in a backyard, actually. And this was a year and a half ago, so before Corona. And it was just a whole new experience, but I loved it because it wasn't just the music, but it was the environment, the energy, you know, that you're able to get from that and kind of study, because it's symbolic to kind of what I do, you know. You connect to people, you know. Music is kind of a universal language, you know. You can speak to a whole brand of people, a whole bunch of people in the music, so.
Exactly. And that's how kind of we connect as well too. And the content I've seen from you, Proper Introductions, the mixtape, but then I got to get into Still Ain't Got You, because we got to talk about the song and the visuals. Let's talk about the song. So, what was the inspiration for Still Ain't Got You?
This is funny. It was actually inspired by kind of like, I would say written wise, it was a girl that I've known since my freshman year of college. And this is actually the same college me and May went to, Dixie State.
Oh, okay, same school, nice. All
right. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so that's how I know her. But it was kind of a time where I was trying to get at the girl. But you know, I'm very focused on myself and focused on what I need to do, and so is she. And so that's where I still ain't got you. It's been 2 years and I still ain't got you, you know, just things like that. So that inspired the written part of it. Production wise, I loved, it was this guy, he goes by, I don't know how to explain, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but it's N-I-X-R-E. He's a producer from Toronto.
Okay.
He has from that sound, from production wise, it sounded a lot like a OVO 40, like, so Drake kind of vibe, you know, when I heard it, and I love that. So that's why I picked that production wise.
So. Very cool. So with the song created now, let's talk about what you put together in this video. The visuals are amazing. First off, again, it's Is That Jermaine on Instagram. And obviously you can find the video on YouTube for Jermaine Still Ain't Got You. Just describe for people who haven't seen enough of Utah, how beautiful the visuals are in Utah to help make this video what it was.
Yes. See, that was one of the biggest things was, I'm a Salt Lake City. I'm from Utah. I'm born here, predominantly raised here. I was back and forth from, Las Vegas, Nevada, but mostly here, you know? And that's one of the things is overlooked is the beauty of Utah, especially, you know, just the whole state in general. You know, I've been everywhere in the state. It's a beautiful area. It's a growing area. One of the fastest growing states in America. I'm also, I think it's kind of unnecessary, but I'm a business major. So learning about my state, you know, learning about the economics and things like that as well. It's a growing place. So it's opportunity for people like
absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, people that are, you know, there's people that are migrating here. There's people that are finding little things, you know, out here to do. And so that's one thing I wanted to show in the video is the growth. And I like to try to show diversity in a way as well. We can talk about May. May is also Asian. I am as well. I'm Filipino. And so I kind of wanted to show, like, you know, that it's not, you know, we kind of get like a negative look, especially on the outside, that people think it's just all Mormonism or all white people, and it is predominantly that, but there is growth in a lot of ethnicities within Utah.
Like that, I appreciate you dispelling that myth too.
Especially Salt Lake City.
Yeah, no, yeah. I love that. And so let's talk about the two locations. The first one being on the golf course with Mae Brennan, who we had on a couple months ago. She's a great golfer that's huge in the community. She won on ABC's Holy Moly, which is where we originally found her too. So tell me about getting connected with her. I know you went to school together, but what was that process like getting her out there for the video and shooting on the golf course?
Like I said, me and my buddy Koa. So Koa is the one who directed it. He's also went to Dixie State, but he's from Florida. And I had him come out and we did a video. We came up with some ideas. And we wanted we wanted May because we knew May. We both knew May from school. And she was in the same department. I think she was a marketing major. So me and Cole are both business majors. So we were able to connect with her on that. And we wanted to kind of reach out to people that we knew, and also in that we wanted to get, like I said, we wanted to show off Utah, the beauty of it, but also kind of the culture. Like, Utah is big golfing area. You know, I feel like people don't really know that.
Yeah.
But there's so many golf courses, and my buddy Gunner Huscroft, he actually hooked us up. We went to the golf course out in, I can't remember the name of it, but it was over there by Park City, Utah.
I think it was Homestead, right?
I think it's ringing a bell.
Yeah.
Yes. So we went out there, and he was able to hook us up. He had a buddy out there, so we were able to do a little shoot out there, and it was just, it was amazing. So we were able, I reached out to May. I was like, look, May, we're doing a little, we're doing a music video, and I'd love for you to be a part of it. The theme for her scene was, of course, going to be golfing, and I thought that just fit perfectly because she's a golfer. She's an avid golfer. She's a professional in my eyes. You know, I think she's amazing at golfing. So I reached out to her, and I was like, yeah, definitely you should come out if you have the time, you know. So, and we were able to make it work, and I thank her for that. So
definitely. Now, she was great in the video too. Everyone check that out on YouTube. Still Ain't Got You. And let's talk about the other location for the video, which if you look just once, you think it's a green screen, or you think you filmed on a different planet or something like that. I think it's referred to as the Salt Flats, correct? Tell me a little bit about that location for the video as well too, because that just looks absolutely surreal. And for me to see that video, I was like, there's no way this is in the United States, right? It couldn't be possible.
It's so crazy. And on top of that, in Utah. I've seen past videos from other artists as well, shoot things at the Salt Flats, but I like the way Cole is able to present it in a panoramic, also in a circle way, you know, landscape, everything. So I thought that the way he was able to bring that onto film was dope. And that's located more, I would say, northwest of Salt Lake City, Utah. It's a beautiful area. I don't really know much about it. I know that, like, the salt, I think, is used in, I don't know if you use it, but for some houses we use salt for, like, water softener, like water, I don't know how to really explain it, but you put the salt in this little water thing, and I guess it, like, does something with the water in the house. But I think it's an international business. But yeah, Salt Flats, we did it there, and I thought that it was a beautiful area to kind of show off what's in Utah, you know.
Yeah, no.
That on a bigger scale.
You're describing it really nicely. It doesn't do it justice, though, so everyone's got to watch the video. And again, I really appreciate you not only incorporating May, but golf as well, too. Tell me a little bit about your connection to golf. I know you're getting into the game, but you said it's all over Utah, which I didn't really realize until I talked to May. But how's the golf game going for yourself?
Honestly, I just picked back up on it a few months ago, and I'm getting so much better. Oh my goodness. And it's addicting. It's a game that's super addicting. Like, I love golfing. Like, I can't get away from it. Like, even if it's just a driving range, I just love it. I grew up watching it a lot. My grandpa, who's also my father figure, he was an avid golfer and watched golf. So I've been around it, you know. Golf and music is something I've been around, more of music, but golf I've always seen. You know, it was my grandpa's favorite thing to do and watch, and so I got into it as much as I could. I didn't do it in high school, but I enjoyed playing it more than ever now. I wish I did in high school though, but yeah.
It is. It's absolutely a lifelong game. And I love that connection between golf and music too. It's like, it feels like they're both kind of like it's a never ending chase to get better. And there's never like an end to golf. You can't beat it. You can only get better at it each day. And that definitely ties into your music as well too. So I appreciate you showcasing the game. And that course, you're right, was absolutely beautiful. So shout out to Homestead too. Talk a little bit about upcoming content as well too. While everyone checks that video out, what else do you have planned on top of the mixtape and the visuals that are already out?
More content. I think I'm gonna be I've been working on music. I always work on music. And usually I do it from home. When I do my recording, and then I send it to my buddy, Curtis. He's my engineer. I'm just working right now. I'm really at a place where I'm just kind of working on music and just trying to find a feel back into it, because, I released like a 20 song project, and that's a lot for, especially me. I did that while going to school as well. So, and working. So trying to bounce that out. And now I'm like in a whole new environment, especially with COVID going on. I'm living back in Salt Lake City. So just trying to find a connection and trying to find everything with my music, trying to find the right feel. I'm always creating, always observing, learning. So that's where I'm at right now. I have a lot of songs in the vault, a lot of songs I need to work on, a lot more songs I want to work on, so it's just, I don't know, just working on it right now.
Love it. It's Is That Jermaine, Jermain on Instagram. And where else can they find the music as well too? I see you're all over Spotify, iHeart, all those good places as well. Yeah.
Spotify, Apple Music, all platforms, YouTube. I even have and SoundCloud with some old music on there, Javonte Jermaine. You can find it anywhere right there. I love Apple Music, so
shout out to Apple Music. And then we got to finish with our 19th hole question. We ask this to everyone on the show. So whether it's maybe after a recording session or maybe after finishing a round on the golf course, what's like your go-to like meal and drink to get at the end of the day?
Ooh, tough one. After a good recording session, I would say, I love Asian food. There's this Korean barbecue food around the corner from the studio that I go to, and I love going there. Like there was a point where it was kind of unhealthy. I was going almost every day. After golf, honestly, I love something filling, because usually I'm starving after golf. Like I'm hungry.
People don't get that who don't play the game. They think it's a lazy sport, but it takes the energy out of you.
Yes, because I think it's a lot of mental as well, focusing, and of course upper body strength, and then of course if you're a walker, if you walk on the golf course, that already takes energy as well, so it does take a lot of energy. And then you got the sun beating on you all day. So it's a lot.
It is.
But I love like having like a cool little Corona and a fat double cheese burger with bacon on it.
The burger beer combo is pretty popular on the podcast. So I appreciate that. Hey Jermaine, thanks for stopping in, man. I really appreciate you putting out those visuals with May. We're gonna go out and we're gonna play Still Ain't Got You right now. So this is Still Ain't Got You by Jermaine. Jermaine, thank you for joining the Course of Life, my man.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
You mind if I say some things? I mean, I was gonna say it regardless. Look, I keep checking on you like I'm checking canvas. That body is an art, but your soul's the canvas. You never had this. I'm talking about my love. List all the best things, I'm all of the above. We ain't in Chi-Town, but we can still make them cubs. Give you kisses, lead it by them hugs. I save your plate after that, apply you back rubs, love. Let me show you what I'm about. Before I lose faith, now you wonder what I'm about. I'm just asking for your time, know that I'm on your mind. It's mutual, baby, don't be scared, let's give this shit a try. It's been 2 years, and I still ain't got you. Please don't tell me that the fear got you. It's been 4 years, and I still ain't got you. Please don't tell me that your fear got you. It's been 6 years, and I still ain't got you. Please don't tell me that your fear got you. I still won't have you. I can see your heart how you still love. I might make mistakes, just know it's still love. Back on topic like I never lost it. We've been friends too long, I'm just being honest. It's been a few years, maybe like six. Introduced myself to you when Jez was in the mix. School days were fun, now I'm back up on my shit. I never chase a girl, especially if you think she's it. Cause honestly she's not, but for her, the hoes I'd really drop. And I'ma need to see some effort. And if not, I'll see you never. At least for now, I hope you understand I can't be waiting here forever. And I still ain't got you. Please don't tell me that your fear got you. It's been 4 years and I still ain't got you. Please don't tell me that your fear got you. It's been 6 years and I still ain't got you. Please don't tell me that your fear got you.
That interview with Jermaine is thanks to our friends at Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. It's a one-of-a-kind phone holder for golfers designed to mount right onto the golf cart. The Phone Caddy works seamlessly with almost any phone model, and it Velcros onto the cart in seconds. Keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the Phone Caddy. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. And it's great stocking stuffer. It's nice little size, fits into really any stocking whatsoever. Even comes in a handy little pouch, so you don't really need to, you know, wrap it. You can just keep it in the pouch and put it in there.
That's right. Yeah.
And for our listeners, you can save 20% off your purchase of the Phone Caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. And now, too, you can use this code to save 20% off their Patriotic line, typically excluded from any deals they do. That's right. You can save 20% off a Phone Caddy to support the police officer, firefighter, or veteran in your life. So again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 20% off your purchase, including the Patriotic line of the Phone Caddy at DesertFoxGolf.com. And we're back. Great interview there with Jermaine. What you just heard there, that was Still Ain't Got You. If you haven't seen the music video of this, you've got to. He filmed it out in the Utah Salt Flats. The visuals are pretty incredible.
Yes, I knew you were going to be a sucker for that.
Yes.
I know you love a good production shot. And this is Bonneville, Utah. I looked it up a little bit exactly where it is. Google the Utah Salt Flats. Watch that video for Still Ain't Got You, and you'll see what an awesome spot that is. Just shoot anything. It looked like a green screen, I said in the interview. I was like, it looked fake for a moment. I had to catch myself. He actually went out there. Really cool content from Jermaine. Looking forward to new music and more content on the golf course, too. He's just picking up the clubs and getting into the game more. Has a good friendship there with May as well, too. So she'll take him out to the course much more, hopefully, as well.
Love it. And you want to make sure you subscribe so you can hear updates on past guests. We do that. We let you know what our past guests are doing, too. And make sure you subscribe, like I said, and rate us as well. Give us 4 or 5 stars. You give us 1 star if you want. We won't hate you for too long.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
not offended. Right. I mean, I might be offended for a little while. Alex may not be. But Alex, let's talk about what a lot of people were probably offended by, and that was the results of your picks this past week for college football.
Oh yeah, this was a really rough football weekend all around for me. I've been kind of dreading this segment right here ever since I've seen everything go down, starting on Saturday. Another losing week for me, second in a row, 4-6 on the picks this week. The Big Ten returned, had a nice full slate of games. It did not come to fruition to me. So we're officially back at another put up or shut up week. The last time I had a put up or shut up week, I went 7-3 and got us back on the bandwagon rolling. So we're back at another crossroads right now. Hopefully the picks are a little bit better next Saturday, though.
Let's move over to the NFL because it was a doozy of a week. Your Patriots hosted Jimmy G and the Niners. How'd that go?
Murder, pretty much. Yeah, the 49ers absolutely ran right down the throats of the Patriots defense. Cam Newton looked lifeless, out of tune, and incoherent. He got benched halfway through the third quarter, and there was absolutely no touchdown scored by the Patriots at home for the first time in a long, long time. And there's a lot of questions to be asked now in Foxborough. I'm just like so shocked that we're in this position already. I thought that Bill Belichick would keep the ship afloat here through six games, but 2-4, like looking at a lot of things in the future, and it's not looking too bright right now.
It's crazy. You know, it's all right, buddy. It's okay.
It's okay. If only I have six rings to fall back on, fortunately. So yeah. I think about that in these lesser just times, but a
think
tough
about
go, right?
that. Think about how Tom Brady is doing fine, how he's now going to have Antonio Brown in his arsenal. Man, Antonio, what happened here?
The rich get richer, don't they, right now? Man. Brady now 5-2 with the Tampa Bay Bucks. They beat the Raiders in commanding fashion, throwing up 45 points. Brady and Gronk crushing it. What a dichotomy that is between those two franchises now. We were all wondering how this was going to go. It is now severely tilting towards Tampa Bay in the Bill versus Brady debate. This is just an absolute nightmare scenario for me as a lifelong Patriots fan. I still have a small piece of me that is, I'm happy that Tom Brady is still able to succeed. A vast majority of is very unhappy at the way it's happening right now in Tampa Bay with Gronk. But just an absolute nightmare scenario for New England Patriots fans. And I'm sure a lot of people out there on this podcast right now are like, oh, boo-hoo, Alex. Boo-hoo. Yeah. You've had your championship, so it's okay. Yeah, you can rain down on me right now.
Well, if it makes you feel any better in terms of, you know, I can always fall back on how the Giants beat the Patriots twice in the Super Bowl from behind. Oh, sure. But after the continuing horribleness and suckage of the Giants, I just don't know anymore.
They look so poised to win last Thursday night, and they gave it up at the last second, giving 12 unanswered up to the Eagles in the fourth quarter. It was just not a good look for them. And of course, they had the humiliation moment where quarterback Daniel Jones was running all by himself, just completely untouched, him and the end zone, nobody in front or behind him. And he just quite literally just fell over himself.
Literally.
It was an all-time fall down moment in sports.
It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. But, you know, it's a good thing I don't pay attention to the Giants anymore, so I don't see this stuff.
Right, yeah, just once a week, 90 seconds, we're in and out, and I got it over there for you. On to the next week. let's talk about that college basketball bubble that I brought up at the top in the intro. I sent you this article. I don't know if you got a good look at this. I know you'll appreciate this because we were laughing at the thought of the NBA going into a bubble at Disney World about 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. We thought this was an absolute joke. And now look at them now. Bubbles are going to be the new norm in sports, it seems like, with this upcoming Bubbleville for maybe up to 35 or 440 college basketball teams that are participating in neutral site games in Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut.
Which we know very well. We know Mohegan Sun very well.
We do. Yeah, I've been there for some. Was I there for a Quinnipiac game? I don't know. They played several there. I went there for a Celtics preseason game. They used to play Celtics preseason game there. You could get some autographs back in the day there.
I've been there to gamble, so that counts. Yeah, I haven't been to the basketball arena, but I've been there to gamble.
So that's going to be their little bubble. I mean, they've got a couple different hotel areas where they can.
It's a nice place. It's very nice there.
It's good neutral site for. They could have small amounts of fans at those games too. They actually could. I think they could pull it off. The stadium itself seats about 7,000 or 8,000. So if they split seats off, it could be about maybe 1,000 to 1,500 people. They could foreseeably get into those bubble games. So that could be interesting to see how this plays out. So I'm watching the Bubbleville in Connecticut, and I hope it's successful. And I see that the Quinnipiac Bobcats are going to be joining for a certain extent of it. So
that's what I was going to say. Is Quinnipiac going to be there? And that's what I'm happy about.
Some of those neutral fight tournaments, you know, Thanksgiving weekend, those tournaments, little four teamers that they do around Christmas weekend and the holidays. Those are great spots to have nice neutral site bubble events and get the teams to play together in a safe environment. So all for the college basketball bubble.
Looking forward to it. Let's do a quick baseball update because, you know, there is the World Series going on. And it's pretty, game four was really exciting. I don't know if you saw the end of that game.
It was wild. Double throw mistakes there. The runner fell over rounding third and then ended up sliding in and being the hero. Five seconds later.
Go Rays. Go Rays. I'm so just go Rays. That's all I can say.
We'll see what happens at the end, whether the Dodgers do break that World Series curse and get rid of that Buffalo Bills vibe.
Yeah, they're the Bills. They're not going to win. It's not going to happen. Let's hashtag always end with the food.
Yep, hashtag always end with food brought to you by our friends at Restelli's Meats. Promo code GOLF10 for 10% off everything at restellis.com. High quality, responsibly sourced meats, packaged, shipped directly to you. No grocery store trip at all. Restellis.com, promo code GOLF10. The question before we get to your baking exploits is Halloween is officially this week.
It is.
And everyone's kind of wondering, well, it's going to look different based on where you are on the map. What do you have in store for your Halloween day? Because I think it's kind of a different vibe for everybody, no matter where you live.
Well, you know, we don't even know. I haven't heard anything about what my neighborhood is doing. So, I mean, we got a bag of candy. We're just going to stick it out the front door and just let people take it.
That'll be great. I'm curious to see how long it lasts before one annoying 13-year-old just takes the entire thing and tries to shove it into his bag. Because I tried this once when I was younger, and that's what happened. So you got to keep an eye on it for me.
Yeah.
You know, be police there. We're doing individual bags. We're just going to put a little front table out front. I think we'll just kind of chill and sit out there and let people come up as they wish. But it's going to look different for everyone. Shout out to everyone kind of improvising. I've seen like chutes where you can throw the candy down that are like 10-foot PVC poles where you can put candy down and send it to someone distance correctly. So whatever you got to do, make it happen. Keep trick-or-treating alive in any form that you'll have it. I'm doing pretty much that. And then we're going around and we're doing some family stops too. We're going to some friends, doing little pre-made Halloween gifts with some pumpkin bread, some candy, and some alcoholic shooters for the parents. Going to do a little front yard stop by and say hi to people there. So happy Halloween to everyone out there. Mike, what's the baking update on your front? I think it's Seinfeld related,
it's
right?
Babka, which... You know, I made babka before and I was trying to decide what I wanted to bake this weekend because I had the weekend off. And honestly, part of it might have been influenced by just having watched the bread episode of Great British Bake Off where they did babka.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I decided to make babka.
Chocolate babka, Seinfeld episode, which everyone knows. Now, for the amateurs and the layman's termers at home, what is a babka?
Babka is basically a sweet bread that is rolled up with some kind of filling, typically either chocolate or cinnamon. And then the roll is then cut in half. So the exposed layers are shown when it's baked. Looks really pretty. It's really nice.
And the result, how'd you do?
I did pretty well. You know, I've done it a couple times. I like this recipe. It's actually a Binging with Babish recipe. So shout out to Babish on YouTube.
Love it. Shout out to Babish. Shout out to the babka. Say that 10 times. You know? But congratulations on the baking exploits. They continue. That's another great episode of The Course of Life. Thank you for everyone who has joined. Next week, going to be another great one. Everyone have a good week.